This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Congressman Matt Gaetz launches his effort to oust House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Meta plans fees for Facebook and Instagram users in Europe, and more Americans are now sticking with their jobs after record turnover during the pandemic.
Economists say that really the overall driving force is the softening labor market. There are fewer jobs out there, and people are just starting to feel a bit less confident about quitting their job and finding a new job tomorrow.
It's Tuesday, October 3rd. I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. GOP Representative Matt Gaetz and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy are today set to clash in a historic Capitol vote over party leadership. Last night, Gaetz formally initiated a motion to oust McCarthy as Speaker, setting the stage for several votes that will gauge Republican support for McCarthy and Democrats' involvement in his leadership.
What you'll see when we cast this first vote will be my floor, not my ceiling. And I think that as we have more votes later, numbers will likely grow because every day members wake up, they continue to see more broken promises from Speaker McCarthy.
Few in the Capitol are surprised by the mutinous plan, given Gaetz's longstanding opposition to McCarthy, who pushed through this weekend's short-term spending deal despite objections from hardline conservatives. McCarthy has expressed readiness for any vote and portrayed Gaetz as an obstructionist driven by personal animosity. Gaetz has said his opposition to McCarthy isn't personal. We're exclusively reporting that TikTok owner ByteDance has almost doubled its operating profit to nearly $6 billion in the first quarter of the year. That's according to a financial report the company shared with employees. The rare look at ByteDance's closely guarded finances shows the extent to which it has turned around its business since 2021, when it had an operating loss of $7 billion. But as finance editor Quentin Webb explains, the report also reveals slowing growth amid competitive pressures and political scrutiny in the U.S.
TikTok is a core part of ByteDance's business, and there is in the background this question of geopolitical challenges, scrutiny in the US of TikTok. So one interesting thing, if we look at the report, is that you can see ByteDance is making efforts to control its costs, and that is perhaps in part an attempt to be better able to weather storms, both political and competitive. Don't forget, of course, that some of the most powerful US social media companies have also pivoted to focus on short video as well. So YouTube is doing very well with YouTube Shorts, and at Meta, the Reels product in particular from Facebook's parent company is doing very well. So those things are weighing on ByteDance's outlook as well.
And how much would you be willing to pay to use your favorite social media app ad-free on your phone? $5 a month? $10? Well, Mark Zuckerberg's Meta wants to charge users in Europe nearly $14, or around 13 euros, each month to use Instagram without advertising that crunches your data to show you personalized ads. Journal tech reporter Sam Schechner says the proposal is part of Meta's plan to navigate government measures meant to tighten consumer privacy protections without losing ad revenues.
It is a really big turnaround for Meta. They've really been on the side of free services that are ad-supported because those can reach the largest number of people. But they've been under pressure for how they use data. In the EU, however, they've really pushed further, and regulators have been taking a much stricter view of the bloc's privacy regulations in recent years, to the point where Meta is now being told it has to ask for user consent in order to even crunch the data that its own apps collect about you in order to show you ads.
Instagram users in Europe may be asked to pay to avoid getting such personalized ads as soon as later this year, though Sam says some might not be eager to do so.
There's certainly people who think they're fine with this, and indeed, it's sort of the status quo when you use these apps, so almost by default, people are fine with it. The question is whether they'll pay extra in order to have less of their data. And I think there's certainly some people, if you speak to everyday users, in Europe or in the US. And definitely if you speak to regulators, there's people who are very strong believers in this. Whether there's a significant number who are willing to pay that much remains to be seen.
Coming up, more Americans are staying in their job following the massive turnover during the pandemic. What's keeping people from quitting? Find out after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
The surge in Americans quitting their jobs has fallen from the record highs it hit during the pandemic. The so-called quits rate, the number of resignations as a share of total employment, was 2.3% in July, down from the 3% peak in April last year. Fresh quits data is due out later today, and ahead of the release, my colleague Sandra Kilhoff spoke to Journal Economics reporter Harriet Torrey. She began by asking her why the decline is so significant compared to recent years' data.
Well, the share of people who are prepared to quit their jobs is a very important statistic in the economy because it tells us a lot about how confident people feel about finding a new job. If a lot of people are quitting their jobs, that's a sign that they feel like the labor market is strong. They can quit their job, go out tomorrow and get another job and hopefully find a position that's also better paid and maybe has better working conditions. And what we saw in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic was that these shutdowns that shut down the economy, a lot of people lost their jobs, but then demand suddenly roared back. Businesses reopened and there was a lot of people wanted to get out and travel and do lots of things. And there was suddenly a huge demand for workers. So businesses really had to step up in terms of the hourly wages that they were prepared to offer, the working conditions. A lot of companies started offering better benefits, paid time off, things like that, because they were really having to fight to keep their workers because a lot of people were prepared to just quit and get a better job very easily. And so we saw the rate of job openings and also the rate of quits really surged in roughly the middle of 2022. That has eased gradually over the past year, and the quits rate is now back to where it was in 2019.
Okay, so what is driving this lower quits rate right now? Is it macroeconomics or something else that's keeping Americans in their jobs?
Economists say that really the overall driving force is the softening labor market and the fact that there are fewer jobs out there and people are just starting to feel a bit more hesitant, a bit less confident about quitting their job and finding a new job tomorrow. And it puts a bit of doubt in their mind about whether they want to quit their job. I mean, we still have a very strong labor market. The unemployment rate is very low. Employers are still creating jobs, but it's just not quite as hot as it was about a year ago.
So, Harriet, as you explained, there are some macroeconomic factors at play here, but you also write that Americans are happier in their jobs now, and that's keeping them in their roles.
There is some evidence that people are feeling satisfied in their jobs. There was a survey published in May by the Conference Board that found that US employees' job satisfaction was the highest it had ever been since the survey began in 1987. And when you find out the factors behind this, a lot of it is to do with hybrid work and remote work, the opportunity that people have now to work from home several days a week or to negotiate with employers. If they get a competing job offer, they could maybe negotiate to work more at home or to be fully remote. And it just gives employees a degree of flexibility that they didn't enjoy really before the pandemic to the same extent at all. And for a lot of workers, that has dramatically improved their work-life balance. So there is evidence that people are just happy in their jobs right now. Some people anyway.
And are these factors and the decline in the quits rate likely to continue, Harriet, or could that change? I mean, there's a lot of speculation around a potential recession next year.
There is, but still, this is a very interesting moment for labor in the economy. I mean, we've seen that labor unions have won humongous victories in their fight for different but better paying conditions. They've exerted clout not seen in decades with pay increases and benefits in industries that have worker shortages. You know, a recent example was the strikes in Hollywood, but also we saw other industries, transportation industries, getting big pay increases for their workers. So there are signs that this is continuing, but cyclically, we are also perhaps headed into a period in which, you know, there is a lot of debate of whether the Fed can achieve a soft landing and bring down inflation without causing a recession. And there are concerns that the economy is going to cool or that something could break and there could be a big rise in unemployment. So it's a bit of a mixed picture because, yes, there is a worker shortage and that has helped labor unions to win concessions. But at the same time, there are some clouds on the macroeconomic horizon. And we are seeing that in the fact that the quits rate has come down from where it was about a year ago.
Harriet, thank you so much for speaking to us about the state of the U.S. labor market. That was Journal Economics reporter Harriet Torrey.
Thank you.
Office attendance in major U.S. cities remains at just half of 2019 levels, as efforts to increase the amount of workers going into the office have been largely ineffective. Castle Systems, which tracks security card swipes, said the overall return rate reached just half of pre-pandemic levels in late September. And according to Moody's Analytics, preliminary data for the third quarter shows the national office vacancy rate hit 19.2%, just below the historic peak of 19.3% in 1991. The disappointing rates are worsening challenges for office landlords with high vacancies, though many believe businesses may gain more leverage for return-to-office mandates if the U.S. economy weakens, prompting slower growth and layoffs. The jury selection begins today in one of the biggest financial fraud cases in U.S. history. With more than half a dozen criminal charges, FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried is accused of causing the crypto exchange's meltdown last year by allegedly stealing billions of dollars from customers and manipulating digital token prices. Bankman-Fried has pleaded not guilty to all charges. Journal reporter Alexander Osipovich spoke to the Tech News Briefing podcast about what we can expect as the case unfolds.
The trial that begins today with jury selection will put Sam's defense to the test, and we will see whether the government is able to make its charges stick. One of the most interesting things about this trial is that three members of Sam Bankman-Fried's inner circle have pleaded guilty and are expected to testify against him. These are Caroline Ellison, who was the former CEO of Alameda Research and who at one point dated Sam, Gary Wang, who was a co-founder of FTX and responsible for a lot of its technology, and Nishad Singh, who is FTX's director of engineering. If these cooperating witnesses take the stand, it'll be very interesting to see what sort of things they reveal about Sam and how he ran FTX and what he knew about the misuse of customer funds and whether he basically masterminded it.
For more on the trial, check out the latest episode of Tech News Briefing, wherever you get your podcasts. Ford and General Motors have laid off an additional 500 workers at plants hit by spillover effects from the United Auto Workers strike. The affected workers are from facilities that supply parts to assembly plants that have been hit by the walkout. That brings the number of such workers off the job because of the strike's effects to over 6,000, with several suppliers citing furloughs directly tied to the walkouts. The UAW has been gradually expanding strikes affecting GM, Ford, and Stellantis facilities after failing to agree on a new contract last month. And Pentagon officials have said it has more than $5 billion remaining in its coffers to provide weaponry and other security assistance to Ukraine. Administration officials say it's unclear how long that money would last, with a number of factors contributing to the rate at which security aid flows to Kyiv, but they believe it could stretch for another few months. The short-term spending bill signed by President Biden on Saturday omitted aid for Ukraine and raises questions about the future of U.S. support. The Biden administration had sought another $24 billion in Ukraine funding, and on Monday, Biden said he expected House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and the Republican House majority to pass more Ukraine aid. Is there life on planets other than Earth? For generations, scientists have puzzled over the question, searching for planets that might have the right conditions both inside and outside the Milky Way. There are thousands of exoplanets, those beyond our solar system, ranging from gas giants to balls of rock to possible ocean worlds and so-called super-Earths. But even as new technology has given scientists a glimpse at these distant worlds, one lingering question is whether any of them can support life and what form it might take. University of Arizona astronomer Chris Impey told the Future of Everything podcast about what exactly makes a planet habitable.
We're kind of stuck doing the most obvious thing, which is we look for the thing we know. We look for life as we know it on this planet, when that may not be the full spectrum of what you might call biology in the universe. We look for life that uses liquid water as a medium, when that may not absolutely be true everywhere. And so we just make these assumptions, and you sort of do the experiment you can do, because you have to know how to recognize it. The uncomfortable fact of this field is that life might be so strange that it's unrecognizable. And then how do you define an experiment to detect it or find it?
And you can learn more about the search for exoplanets in the latest episode of The Future of Everything, wherever you get your podcasts. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. Today's show is produced by Mohsen Ali and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer today was Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.